Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We are chatting with John Rubino, founder and editor of the Dollar Collapse website, which we will post a link to below this interview. Now, John, let's start off by talking about the continued tensions and war between Russia and Ukraine. We've seen the response by the Western countries now to start cutting Russia off in terms of trade, in terms of banking on the SWIFT network. There's a lot of stuff, at least sanction-wise, that the Western countries are doing outside of sending a lot of troops. And it seems like they're just watching this war to see if Russia is actually going to be able to conquer Ukraine and where that will leave everybody. But boy, oh boy, the Russian markets are being hurt. The Russian currency is being hurt. And different commodities. We were talking about supply chain last year. It's definitely going to upset the supply chain for a lot of commodities that Russia is large in. John, what's your takeaway from this increasing tension and now slightly even drawn out war between Russia and Ukraine?
Yeah, well, you know, it's nice to have a little bit of action, right? It's been such a placid few years that I've been craving excitement, really. So, you know, it's good to see it.
No. We're not craving war, though, John. We need to take a step back here. No one wants to see war.
Yeah, no, Corey, I'm joking. You know, we got more excitement being exhausted by the previous few years' action, I think. And yeah, you know, the Russia thing, okay, there are two, I think, valid points of view on the cause of it. One is that Russia is an aggressive empire that wants to take over its neighbors. And the other is that the U.S., by leading NATO into an expansion right to Russia's borders, has forced Russia into it. So that's a longer debate. But I think both sides have a point. But where we are now is that we're slapping sanctions on one of the biggest exporters of commodities at a time of spiking commodity prices. You know, we're in a massive commodities inflation right now, which is screwing up most of the global economy. And these sanctions will just make it worse. So that's from a financial stability and an investing standpoint. I think that's the main takeaway here, that the instability that we've seen in the commodities markets will be exacerbated to the extent that we shut Russia out of some of these markets. And then the SWIFT thing, you know, you got to blame the U.S. for all this stuff. We're the instigator in so many things in the world right now. And every time we get mad at somebody, we threaten to kick them out of the global banking system by shutting them out of this SWIFT bank settlement system, which we run. And you know, in the short run, perhaps that has a moderating impact on some countries' behavior. But in the long run, it's going to lead everybody to look for alternatives to SWIFT, which is to say alternatives to the dollar. And, you know, that's one more aspect of the dollar collapse scenario, is that we're misbehaving in so many ways when we're supposed to be the manager of the world's reserve currency, that, you know, we're bringing about the very thing we're trying to avoid, which is the loss of reserve currency status by the dollar. And so what we're doing with Russia right now is contributing to that. And I think that's the bigger part of the story, because I doubt that we go over there and start World War III over Ukraine. You know, more Americans would have to know where Ukraine is and be able to find it on a map before that's a politically viable strategy. But the whole, we're not going to let you use dollars anymore if you don't behave thing is something that will come back to bite us, I think, at some point.
Yeah, John, you outlined two different points there, and both of them seem like we could be making things worse. The first would be slapping the sanctions on to a huge commodity producer when it's not just oil and gas. I mean, they were described to some politician last week as a gas station with nukes. But there is a huge amount of cereal grains and wheat and different food commodities grown in Russia that supply a lot of Asia and a lot of Europe, not to mention nickel and palladium. They're a huge exporter of those. Everybody wants EVs and they want batteries and they want steel to build infrastructure. And that's going to come with nickel, and palladium is very big in the auto catalyst industry. So that's really going to hurt supply chains. And the other big point you made is the SWIFT system and kicking them off. Could we be hurting the dollar and giving them a push to go into alternatives? Which of those do you think is the most important driver to keep our eye on right now?
Well, in the short run, you know, when there's a war, you need to watch it in case it escalates, because people are stupid when they're under pressure, and we are especially stupid at this point in our history. So it's completely possible that something worse militarily comes from this. And that would be the main thing to watch. And then the other stuff is kind of, it's kind of baked in the cake now. You know, we're going to have instability in the industrial commodities markets just because we had instability before. And, you know, add a war and sanctions and everything, and you're kind of guaranteed to get more instability from that. And, you know, Russia, it's still winter. And Russia is the biggest supplier of natural gas to Europe. So unless they're just going to exempt natural gas from the sanctions, which means the sanctions don't hardly mean anything, this is a big deal for Europe. So, you know, instability is what we're going to see from this. So we should be paying attention to that. Although we should have already been positioned for that kind of thing. You know, it doesn't seem like this really changes very many investment theses unless you want to do this one. Assume that the Ukraine thing ends pretty soon. The parties meet, they cut a deal where Ukraine isn't going to be part of NATO anytime soon, and Russia pulls out. All the Russian stocks and related financial assets that are getting whacked right now would go right back up. So it's possible that shorting Exxon and buying, for instance, the Russian miners would be a pretty good play right now. It would be, you know, contrarian, but it's completely possible that, you know, oil goes back down somewhat after the war is over. Russian miners are once again free to export the metals that they're mining, and you make money both ways. So that's something that's maybe one of those don't try this at home things. You know, it's a sophisticated strategy that probably hedge funds should be doing rather than regular people. But still, it could be that 6 months from now, we'll be talking about this as the strategy we should have tried under these circumstances.
That just all ties into the fact of how long do you think this war will go on for, and what do you think, if anything, will be drastically changed on the back end of the war, though, right, John? Because wars do create some outside moves, but usually they're short term, because when a war ends, we do revert back to, in essence, kind of the way things were.
Yeah, and it's highly likely that, not guaranteed, but likely, that we will go back to the point in time before the U.S. started trying to get Ukraine to join NATO. And Ukraine will be a quote-unquote free country under the influence of its gigantic, sometimes mean neighbor. And that's just the way of the world. You know, when you're living right next to an empire, you tend to be influenced by that empire if you know what's good for you. And that's just, you know, it's the fate of countries that live right next to Russia or next to Germany or next to the U.S., you know. So we'll go back to that time, and then the financial markets will adjust accordingly. And you know what? Considering the alternatives, that's a pretty good solution, because if one of the alternatives is a shooting war between the world's two main nuclear powers, that's terrible. And if another alternative is China taking advantage of U.S. distraction over Ukraine to go take back Taiwan, that's also really terrible. You know, there's some really bad potential scenarios here. And if we avoid the seriously bad ones and end up with one of the, you know, bad but not existentially threatening ones, that might be the best we can hope for.
Well, John, just circling back to something else you brought up about the SWIFT banking and a lot of countries trying to get Russia out of that banking system, it does kind of force their hand into looking for alternatives. And they were already looking at this. And you bring up China, they were already working with Iran and China and some of the countries that have these sanctions laid upon them of coming up with their own system. We've seen China come up with their own digital currency. It's possible Russia could do something similar. But a lot of people have pointed to gold and silver and said, hey, is this a good point to highlight precious metals being outside of the fiat money system as an alternative currency? Do you think that will eventually underpin more interest in gold for some of the Asian, in particular Russian and even European citizens?
Oh, yeah. Gold has a very big wind at its back right now, geopolitically, for two things. One is the Ukraine thing and the SWIFT thing and the fact that more and more countries are looking at backing their currencies with gold, either implicitly by just accumulating a lot of it or explicitly by making them exchangeable, you know, going back onto an actual gold standard, because they don't trust the U.S. to be impartial when it comes to global finance. You know, we use the dollar as a weapon. The other one is what happened in Canada just lately when Trudeau froze the bank accounts of his political opponents. That sent a message to everybody with a bank account, really, that your bank account is only safe as long as you don't speak out against your government, no matter what your government is doing, because they now have reserved the right for themselves to go in there and loot your financial life if they feel like it. They can define you as a criminal if you oppose their policies. And once you're defined as a criminal, they can clean out your bank accounts and do all kinds of other things to you. So, you know, watching that, I bet a lot of people are thinking, man, I should probably take some of my dollars out of the bank and buy some silver coins. So I think gold and silver benefit from this kind of really, you know, aggressively stupid government policy that we've seen lately. And as we go authoritarian, which it seems like that trend is kind of baked into the cake right now, it's going to make more and more sense for people to want to function outside the government-run financial system. That's good for cryptos, too. You know, the a lot of crypto wallets got frozen out of some exchanges in Canada, but none of them got looted by the government. They didn't get shut down. So cryptocurrencies also look interesting as a way to bypass the government-run banking system. And these are very big deals because, you know, governments and fiat currency systems only function as long as people choose to believe that these fictitious currencies actually have some real-world value. You know, you take that away by using those currencies as a weapon, and, is, you know, it's not clear how any aspect of today's governments survive.
So, John, since we are talking about gold here, I know a lot of the gold bugs are wondering, why gold isn't higher? We have ongoing war. We have high inflation. Yes, we have central banks hiking rates, but we also have weakness in risk-on assets. So why isn't gold at 2,000?
Well, you know, 2 years ago, Corey, if we'd said, okay, inflation's going to hit 7% in 2022 or full year 2021, where do you think gold's going to be? I probably would have said $4,000 or an ounce U.S., so gold hasn't rocketed the way you would think it would with 1970s level inflation going on around the world. Two reasons for that, or well, one reason for that and then one rationale. Probably the reason is that people haven't completely bought into inflation as a long-term phenomenon. I actually kind of sort of maybe agree with part of this, that a lot of things have spiked but maybe plateaued here. So let's say oil, to just take one example, if it goes up to 100 bucks a barrel and then it stays at 100 bucks a barrel, that's expensive and that's debilitating for parts of the economy, but it's zero inflation going forward if it just stays at 100 bucks. And that could happen to a lot of different things. So all of a sudden the inflation rate from a pretty high level just plateaus and you don't have high inflation anymore. Maybe people are thinking of that and therefore they don't have a sense of urgency when it comes to precious metals. But having said that, you know, gold is still doing okay. It's providing stability in a world that's very unstable. You know, if you have tech stocks right now, you're stressed. You're having trouble sleeping. If you bought Bitcoin, you are probably very worried about what's going to happen next because you've seen it go way up and then drop by almost 50% from its high. Gold, it's just sitting there. You know, it's maintaining the purchasing power of the people who have bought it over time, you know, because it is up probably enough to offset recent inflation. So it's doing kind of what it should do, like its main job, which is to just preserve purchasing power. Now, we want it to spike in relation to inflation, in response to inflation. And that still might come. You know, that tends to come towards the end of an inflationary cycle when everybody believes that inflation is going to be 14% a year forever. And that could happen too. You know, we could see that just because the governments of the world are screwing up on such vast scales. And then we'll get the parabolic rise. But in the meantime, you know, gold's doing its main job pretty well at $1,900 an ounce.
Hey, gold is being a bit more stable, and that is what gold is supposed to do, be a bit more stable, less volatile. And look, we are still right around 1900. That is a good gold price. It's just the fact that a lot of these gold bugs have heard that all these things should be driving gold. To your point, John, up to $4,000, we're having trouble clearing 2,000, let alone 1900, staying right around there.
Yeah, it's definitely a disappointment, but not a horrendous disappointment so far.
There you go. We'll leave it at that. John, thank you as always for your time. We'll chat again in another couple weeks. Hope you have a great rest of your week.
Thanks, guys. See ya.